This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Mass Bay Guides. Mass Bay Guides is our family-run charter fishing fleet that's based out of Scituate, Massachusetts. We've been providing anglers with the ultimate fishing adventure for over 20 years. Whether you're looking to put together a multi-boat corporate fishing trip, a trip for your family, or you're an avid angler looking to catch a giant bluefin tuna, our crew will do anything it takes to make sure you and your friends and your family have a great day on the water. To book a trip with us, please visit the Mass Bay Guides website, www.massbayguides.com. You can search prices, trip information, and get the latest reports and links to our social media pages there. You can also find us directly on Facebook and Instagram and just search Mass Bay Guides. This episode is also brought to you by Deep. New England born and bred, Deep is inspired by the fit of the skate and surf retail world, anchored in the technical aspects of the outdoor and offshore fishing apparel market. Deep designs clothes that bring comfort in the elements and also at the bar and restaurant. If you go visit shopdeep.com and use the promo code Friday30, you can take advantage of the ongoing Black Friday sale now through the holidays. And it'll get you 30% off your next order. Our newest sponsor to the podcast is LT Marine Products. Since 2011, LT Marine has been designing and developing innovative, unique, and high-quality American-made sport fishing equipment. Taylor and I have known the crew at LT since they started. Chris is a great guy. We've been using every single piece of equipment that he's made over the last several years. His rod holders are extremely heavy duty and high quality. He has the machining equipment to be able to put your boat name on the face plates and do other custom work as well, which is pretty cool. And recently, over the last couple of years, we've worked with him to develop some new products that have actually been very popular amongst the Northeast Northeast fishermen, specifically offshore and tuna fishermen. So two of those products have been his swim hook for if you're harvesting a big giant tuna, you want to take care of that fish as best you can prior to bringing him on board. And part of that process is after the fight, swimming the fish, for a certain amount of time, kind of depending on the health of the fish and how the fight went, but usually ends up being around an hour to get all the lactic acid out of the muscles and give a better product at the end of the day when we sell our fish. So we helped him design an affordable swim hook to be able to tow the fish behind the boat at a low speed and accomplish that goal. So, that was a pretty cool product that we collaborated on. And another one is the new LT Marine release hook. We've been doing a lot of release fishing for giants over the last couple of years with the way that the quota has been open and closed. So we've really had a need for a way to properly revive these fish and get them back into good health upon release. So if you go on the LT Marine website, you can see the release hook there. You can also go on our Instagram, Facebook and see how we have it rigged, but it's a tool that we've implemented into our process aboard our boats and it makes releasing fish a lot safer for the crew, a lot better for the fish, and it's a really high quality product. We used it all season, never had a problem, never broke it. So definitely check out that new release hook from LT. Or if you want to see any of Chris's products, you can visit ltmarineproducts.com or check him out on Facebook and Instagram. On this episode of the podcast, we sit down and attempt to answer some of the questions that we received on Instagram from you guys over the past couple weeks. Joining us is our good friend, fellow captain, mate, and of course, pirate, Dave Good. If you haven't listened to earlier episodes of the Sea Bros Fishing Podcast, if you go back, you'll hear a few of them with Dave. He's a great guy. He works on a 78 Rybovich down in Cape Cod called Persistence, and he provides some comic relief as always, but also just a different perspective on fishing up in New England in general. You know, fishing every day with charters is a lot different than the private boat and private sport fish game. So it's always appreciated having Dave on to keep the conversation a little bit more dynamic. But anyways, we had a lot of fun recording this one. A lot of laughs, a lot of new coined phrases over the season that we reminisce about, which was pretty funny. We cover a gamut of topics on this one, ranging from what makes a good breakfast and lunch on the boat to the types of hooks that we've been using over the past couple of seasons. A lot of tangents gone on in this one, a lot of charter stories woven into our answers to the questions. So bear with us. We get a little detailed and a little carried away, but I think you'll all enjoy it. So thank you everyone that submitted ideas, submitted questions, and enjoy this episode of the podcast. Welcome to the Seabros Fishing Podcast.
Anthony kid.
It's Diego.
So
that fish, by the way, was so photogenic.
Look how fat that thing was.
It was round and had the great colors on it.
I think it was smiling right there.
Oh my god.
That fish. That thing was large, dude, that day.
Yeah.
That squidly deadly day.
Yeah.
Picture.
No. There's one.
Dude, that guy on the back right.
Oh. Holy shit.
Annoying as all hell.
Remember he started reeling in the kite when the fish was eating it?
Yes. The fish crashed the kite. Like borderline, like a boil crash. Didn't even eat the bait. And he immediately starts reeling in the kite rod. The reel, the small reel, the actual kite
reel. What you're doing.
And I'm like, reverse, reverse.
Put it back. Put it back where you found it.
Oh, gosh.
I guess we can start the podcast right there.
There's OG. I love that picture. Straight up cornholio at all times.
Sometimes he reminds me of Splinter from Ninja Turtles.
Oh, dude, there's this kid I play lacrosse with down in Rhode Island, and he literally is your dad, but 20 years old. Unbelievable.
Really?
That's really? The same laugh. Does he dead serious. Same laugh and everything.
Does he rip butts while he plays?
Yes.
Does he have a stash? Yeah,
he rolled out the other day. He like
Camel
he's
lights.
He's kind of a hot mess. And I love chopping his arms to pieces. But he like forgot all his gear. Like he thought that he just like drove off and like left it like on the like hood of his car or whatever. And he's like, oh, they're probably on the highway somewhere. And so he like rolls out in work boots. He's a roofer. Rolls out in like work boots and like jeans. And I was like, it's gonna be tough to play in that, but I have extra gear if you want, or you can play in that. Your choice.
That's like skiing in jeans,
dude. This kid would be 100%.
OG used to ski in jeans underneath his ski suit.
Yeah, as
jeans tucked in with a tucked in full on like brass belt buckle, the whole nine.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah,
and he would go right into his Skechers afterwards.
I don't even like to wear jeans under my Grundins. I'm like they're just
I don't
not,
either. I like sweatpants.
I don't like
jeans. Under
sweatpants.
Under
I like Carhartts.
Is that what you wear under?
Yeah, I wear what I'm wearing right now.
Stretchy ones. Like they even jeans. Maybe it's because I'm
being all
fat,
the audio.
We're good. We've been recording all this.
Are we all loud enough?
Everyone's loud enough. Just gotta turn you down a little bit.
Me.
Mm-hmm. But we're good.
My voice is so muscular.
Muscular?
Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but
I'm gonna get one more crispy boy.
Yeah.
I'm just cruising right
now. Get yourself a Bud Light. I'm trying to strategize what questions we should begin with.
Yeah, so you posted something on the Seabros Instagram asking doing a little, want to do a little question answer podcast.
Yeah.
A bunch of people responded.
Seems to be a common theme in the podcast world. So, and it kind of just does it for us.
Irish
cricket. It allows us to have more time to enjoy crispy Bud Lights.
What do you call an Irish cricket?
Irish cricket. This is an Irish orgasm. I heard that from Captain on the Snick.
Dude, like, that is unbelievable.
I was dying. So I was like, I'm stealing that forever. It's not mine.
That's incredible. So we got a whole bunch of questions from people. And
let's talk about what questions we have and then maybe decide which ones we want to start with.
Yeah. So we have hook styles. Are you using different hooks, commercial fishing for, I'm assuming, bluefin tunas versus catch and release and recreationally fishing for them? That was one question. Another question was, what do you do when and if a charter does not tip the mate enough?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there'll be some good ones there. What are some of the more strange charter stories, weird clients, etc. that we've had? So just in general, funny, good charter client stories. Lunch options, which I know Dave is just going to absolutely steamroll with that.
Do love a good lunch, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And then bait question mark, lead sizes. Do you use herring after its mouth is open?
Sounds like a sexual question.
Yeah. There are a few others too, but some aren't appropriate.
Dave's question was pretty funny. Let me read that one. That was, had to do with Bud Lights.
In-depth analysis of why Bud Lights are the superior beer for slaying sea monsters. Is this podcast going to get sponsored by Bud Light one of these days?
I would hope so. Yeah,
send the check.
We have a few others too that maybe we'll do in another one. Trolling techniques. I guess that's just an overall like topic. More stories from OG. We are going to not interview, but chat with OG in the next few weeks. Someone wrote your biggest tunas. Maybe. It's a little hard, kind of a hard-o question.
Yeah. who wrote the trolling one? Trolling techniques.
Jimmy Hanlon.
I wonder if he means techniques. Like tuna trolling or like
striped. I'm assuming, no.
Yeah.
Tuna trolling. I think all these are tuna questions.
I hope so. Those are the best questions.
Probably should touch on Galvin's question.
What does his say?
Tales of fast women and scurvy dogs.
Dude. Oh my god. That is so funny.
How about Claire's question? How much better your lives are with your wives in it?
Much better. Next.
Holy shit.
All right. Well, I mean, the ones I read off were kind of what we thought would fit well into an episode.
Yep.
You know? So why don't we just start at the top with lunch options?
Let's talk about really good boat lunches. Speaking of which, we put a grill on the boat this year. That was huge. Phenomenal.
Speaking of which, we threw the grill in the dumpster about a week ago.
They're one year done. I'm a huge fan of the electric skillet on the boat. Like, just such a great all around.
I agree.
Pull it out into the cockpit and, you know, throw it on the ice chest. It's great for breakfast. Lunch.
It's much easier to clean.
Yeah.
Because if you're
no flames,
if you're offshore, you can just scrape it out.
And they're cheap. And then you, like, same thing. You throw them away at the end of the season because they should get thrown away at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And, but they're awesome. Great for like breakfast, like
they're
hash.
Quick.
Oh, Perfect. Good hash in the morning.
No propane problems. Yeah, it's no always a propane problem. Yeah. At least once a week.
Plug them in and dude, good to go.
We had let me talk about the retirement of this fucking.
Because that actually blends two questions into one. Like bad crazy charter stories and and lunch.
Yeah.
Options.
This is how I was really hoping this was going to go. I was hoping it was going to be a very like organic discussion, you know,
well, lunch
organic lunches,
organic. Don't get that confused with the other O word. So yeah, the grill on its way out, its last like glory story was it took us about 2.5 hours.
Dude, way more than that.
You think more than that?
Honestly, it was like a full tide.
Dude,
trying to cook these,
it would only get to 200 degrees. That is as hot as we could get the grill. Worse. We like air temp cooked sausages,
like almost
like
borderline gorilla panic. Turn the engine on, rev it up, and put it on the turbo to finish cooking these things.
That we were honestly contemplating that. Dude, and it was like in the bay, like the day itself was just like such a kick to the sack. It
horrible.
It was like grease gone, like awesome a million clients. Boats, awesome clients who we just
couldn't catch. A could not our catch. Life depended on
it. It was unbelievable. And then we're like, you know what? We're going to save the day with this hot lunch. Hot lunch turned into hot dinner real quick, dude.
Honestly, we started at probably 11:45 and. We were eating by like 2:45.
You would have been better off using the lighter.
It was horrible.
Just flash it by. What were you making?
The same sausages I just cooked us for supper.
I think it was sausages.
It was
hot dogs too, I think.
Previty sausages.
Which are delicious, by the way.
Delicious.
Brian just smoked some on the Traeger.
It was good.
Nothing like a smoked sausage in your mouth, you know what I mean?
Previty's, Traeger, send the checks.
Yeah. But yeah, so back to lunches. Grilling, I think for me, is option like A. You know, prime conditions.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoy a, you know, grilled sausage, grilled hamburger.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward.
Right. You could do a breakfast sandwich if you wanted. If you want to get a little crazy with some tinfoil or a little.
I like the breakfast options. I like cooking breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm.
A nice hash. Some eggs, breakfast sandwiches, maybe.
You do that route, you really don't even need lunch, and you can kind of just snack through it.
Honestly, you could just cook like 18 pounds of bacon and eat it like all day.
It's true.
Let's be real.
Have you ever had the Jimmy Dean like packs? They like they, it's like potatoes and like peppers and onions,
yes, like
and sausage.
It's like a bowl,
all,
right? Kind of.
And then you just like crack eggs in it, and like you like that is a absolute delight.
That sounds delicious.
It's so good, and they're frozen. You just let them like. You just let them thaw.
Let them hang out in the air. Then you cook in the air.
You hit them with like a blow dryer. That's how you guys want to do it. But no, those are awesome. But the McKims, they actually love fried, like their thing, different lunch, sorry. They love fried chicken on the boat.
Oh, I love fried chicken.
Which
cold fried chicken,
which
too.
Is funny on a boat with teak, but you know,
yeah.
I love it.
I know.
They love
it. Bongies, does make a mess.
Bongies fried chicken.
Bongies?
Yeah, it's from Ducks. They're in Duxbury. It's
Perrette's fried chicken. That stuff's good.
Fried chicken's so good.
Let's go back to like, all right, you're working a day trip.
Mm-hmm.
What's your like go-to food?
Dogs are probably the easiest.
Dogs are easy.
Because they're already, I mean, they're, you just heat them up and freaking put them in a bun and call it a day. And they're cheap, so they're easy to just like hand out to customers. Customers are happy.
Yeah.
Rich Gillette showed up to the boat one time, right? It's like lunchtime, and he pulls out like a thermos, and I'm like, oh, he's got some coffee. And then
it's like tomato soup or some shit.
No, it's even better. All of a sudden, he's pulling out ketchup and mustard and buns. And I'm like, what in the world? Is he got like chili in there? Is he making, are we like, is he doing like, I don't even know, like chili sandwiches? That's not even a thing. But like, I have no clue what he's doing. The thermos is packed with fucking hot dogs. And I'm like, what is this? And he's like,
hot
he's
dogs
like,
dude, in a thermos.
Yeah, you put, he's like, you put boiling water in the morning, fill it with hot dogs.
Dude.
And then
oh
he's
God,
like, at lunchtime,
horrible.
They're good to go. He's like, He's like, we used to do this all the time as kids. And I was like, I have never seen this, but this is hysterical.
That's incredible, dude.
Full like old school thermos filled to the brim with hot dogs.
I don't think I could trust somebody that could take out hot dogs out of a thermos and say they were cooked.
It was so, oh dude, I mean they're cooked as they're.
Was he sicko enough to drink the hot dog water?
No. Hot dogs are disgusting, as you know, like, yeah, you think about the
material. Dude, steamed hot dogs in general, oh, just don't do it for me.
Like baseball hot dogs?
Yeah.
Oh, crazy. Yeah. I mean, hot dogs are lips and buttholes anyway.
Yeah, very true.
What are the good meals?
I'm more like, back to the breakfast thing. Mm. My go-to deal is, you know, I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, 2, 3 in the morning. I'll eat.
You're goddamn savage for breakfast.
I'll eat a breakfast right then. I'll eat a whole thing of oatmeal, yogurt, you know, whatever. And then I usually make a breakfast sangi and then bring it with me. And then eat another breakfast once we get out there. And then I don't usually go with the lunch. Like, unless we're grilling, like, for a charter. But yeah. I usually do jerky, fruit, like, just snacks. Because
You have quite the assortment of jerky. Can we talk about jerky for a minute?
Yeah.
I had some of it he has. Amazing.
The cilantro lime.
Other stuff, my fucking tongue, like, does weird shit. He's either on fire or like wants to curl up and like shoot down the back of my throat, or it's horrible.
My sister-in-law was nice enough to get me like a jerky like subscription thing for my birthday.
Dude, I don't know what they put on that jerky.
And it makes a perfect boat snack. So
it's like
I just,
they get bored and like,
I agree with you. Not
start
all
drinking.
Of them.
Let's put this fucking spice in here. Call it Gorilla Panic.
What's your favorite jerky?
Like meat type or like brand?
I guess both. Like just like if my go to one pack, like
my go to Claire gets this like Country Archer.
Oh yeah,
it's like a decent for you run of the mill jerky, just like the original one. But there's like, actually, you know who makes really good or has good jerky is and all the, if there's any like jerky experts listening to this, I'm gonna get my limbs ripped off, but. Trader Joe's.
Honestly, my care level is minimal.
Yeah. Trader Joe's makes good jerky. If you're going to like buy in bulk for the fishing season, that would probably be my go-to.
Trader Joe's. I like the barbecue, like smoked barbecue type stuff.
Yeah. Fruit, veggies. I'm a carrot stick guy.
That's
like
weird, dude.
You
we
know?
Stop talking about lunch options, I think.
Dave, if you're getting invited to go on like a trip offshore canyons, what's your go-to lunch options there? Because that's actually very strategic.
Lunch in the canyons is super important, but like it's also like hard. You need something that's not going to take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I was like always a big fan of like the pre-cooked trays of stuff, you know, like lasagna or baked ziti. You know, like that. Something that you can like easily throw in a bowl, like, because you know, it's not like everyone's sitting down to eat all at once, like that's just not realistic all the time anyways.
Yeah,
so like stuff that guys can cut, like grab as they're getting hungry is like, that's what I liked. That's what I always did on,
if you have a access to the microwave, ever grab a scoop of whatever, throw it in there, heat it up, you got lunch, you got dinner. I agree, that's a really easy way.
Pre-made trays are awesome, you know. But
it's a good idea.
I think the hardest trips to eat lunch on are haddock trips.
Yeah.
And probably like when it's lights out canyon fishing.
Yeah, that's like impossible. You're just not
eating.
You need
stuff that's like, you know, wrapped, that can stay wrapped, that you can just throw down somewhere and then go back to eating it.
Or breakfast wraps are good.
You need to be able to not have to use your hands, especially haddock fishing. Those things are absolutely disgusting fish.
Yeah.
In all remarks.
They're gross.
What's your go-to?
Delicious, though.
What's your go-to if you don't have like access to a microwave, which we don't on our boat? Like, canyon trip, what are you doing for cold meals?
Cold meals?
Are you a make sandwich as you go person, or are you a pre-made sandwich guy?
Chicken salad.
I make it as we go.
Chicken salad's good. Chicken salad's easy. You got a big tub of it, smash it on the bread, you're good to go.
Yeah.
I usually don't make anything. I usually am just busy and people are like trying to put food in my mouth because I'm like running around with the chicken with my head cut off.
Yeah, the charter scene is so different. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have a whole lot of experience there, but
you have plenty of experience.
Not on the charter side.
You've had a lot of like private like trips with Tucker and stuff, yeah, small, though.
Like here, there, like. I definitely never worked like a whole year on a charter boat or anything like that. Yeah. You know, which is kind of funny. Definitely something I didn't bring up like before when we were talking, but difference in how we came up, but the charter scene is so different.
Dude, I have a really funny charter lunch story for you guys.
Well, let's hear it.
So sometimes charters are just tough.
Yeah.
You know, like we love our clients, but like sometimes you just don't.
Like them.
Like them.
Yeah. So, you can't like everybody.
Yeah, no. I mean, and they're not going to like, some people aren't going to like you either.
I'm going to say out of 2 weeks, there's like two or three individual people that are annoying.
Yeah.
But they're still not bad people. They're just annoying. Like, yeah. They don't, you know, they haven't been on boats. They haven't fished. And it's like they're either in your way or they're doing the same thing over and over again. Go ahead. I want to steal your light right
no,
now.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, so like, what's this horrible story?
So this guy, these are like that type
annoying.
Of
annoying. You're like annoyed all annoyed day. You could catch eight granders.
Yeah, it didn't really matter. So it was pretty slow striper fishing in the morning, like real slow at the race.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a middle of the day, like tide change or something like that. And it was just like question after question, like, should we move? Should we go here? That's how the day progressed. And then it got to like 10, 11. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to start picking away at my lunch like before, you know, the next tide. And so I put my stuff out on the table in the wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And then like fish started coming up frothing. I'm like, oh, fuck yeah. All right. Finally, we're going to get into some shit. So like my lunch is now on the table, just exposed.
Right.
And we get into these like savage feeds of stripers. I like make a cast, hook one up, hand it off, pull the hook like immediately. I'm like, fuck. Grab another rod. I go to make a cast. The customer actually rips the rod like out of my hand to like as I'm about to cast, like perfect cast. Like I have like the angle absolutely perfect in the moment, like on these fish. Screws it all up. We miss. We don't get a single bite out of this whole feed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just one of those, like, let me do what I need to do here, you know, yeah. And especially when it's been a slow day.
Yeah.
So I'm frustrated. I look up in the wheelhouse. My entire lunch is gone. And there's just a dude there, like, finishing off, like, the last, like, piece You're of crust from my sandwich. Me,
unbelievable.
I'm like,
you ate your lunch? Well, your whole lunch?
My entire fucking lunch. That's so good. Like, it wasn't, like, a shared, like a sharing looking lunch. It wasn't, right. It wasn't like, this is a whole pizza. It's like, this is one sandwiches. Sandwich in one sandwich bag.
So good.
Oh, it was freaking horrible though. But you know what? To dovetail stories, I got a badass tip that day.
Oh my God.
It was like
always the days that like, you know, 100% that's going to be a horrible tip. Actually, I shouldn't say that. Very 50-50. Like, the days you think you're going to get a horrible tip,
yep.
You either get a really good tip or you do get the horrible tip.
Yep. So true.
Like, the days that you work really hard and you might not even get a, you know, work really hard tuna fishing and you don't even get a bite, you get the most money for.
I think sometimes those, like, customers can see that, like, you're working hard trying to make stuff happen.
Right.
It, like,
despite and you care the more fact, than them.
Yeah, despite the fact. Yeah, exactly. Because right. They're like, I'm out of work. I'm out here having a blast. Exactly. You know what I mean? You know, sometimes they don't understand that, but you know, you get those ones that are like, I'm not in the office, so I don't really care. Like, and they recognize that like you're working hard trying to make a good day, you know, materialize for them, and
right.
You know, they appreciate that. So
yeah,
sometimes those are the better tip days in the handful of charters that I've done. But
what do you do if you get stiffed?
Bam. There's one of our questions.
Yeah.
Perfect. What do we do? It's hard, you know. I mean, it's not too often that someone just doesn't tip you, but there's times that the customers forget, you know, oh shit, you know, let me go grab cash or whatever, and they actually forget because they had either a good day or it was, you know, they're just trying to get off the boat because it was a bad day or whatever. I think it's like up to the captain to go up and talk to the customers and basically phrase it as, hey, you all set with, you know, so-and-so, and, you know, how do you do today? Did you do a pretty good job? You all set with the tip and blah, blah, blah. Kind of work it in that question, that way, and making it seem like you didn't even know if he got tipped, instead of being like, hey, why'd you only tip him $200 when 20% was, whatever, 280 or something?
Yeah.
I think there's ways that you can word it that don't come off in a way that you're like, you know, why do you screw the mate over?
Yeah.
Because ideally you want them back and you want them to be like, to now understand how much they should tip if the mate did do a good job.
And they might honestly have just, you know, they might have tried to split it between the guys, and everyone was, you know, people for the most part like to hand you the money themselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one guy might not have, you know, known what the percentage was or whatever. So you always got to approach it with that mindset. Like maybe it was just a simple mistake.
Sometimes it is. And I think a lot of it too is they're drinking most of the day. And like, you know, say the trip's $1,200. Oh, you know, it's $1,000 trip. Let's tip them 200.
Yeah.
But like, you know, for 20%, it's whatever, 240.
Yeah.
So, like, that doesn't sound like a huge difference, but if you're doing it every day, those, you know, that 40, 60, 80 bucks adds up over the year, you know, to $10,000.
Yep.
So, you kind of have to pick and choose which customers you go after. And for the most part, I bet you we have to actually talk to a customer like maybe 10 times a year, and 9 out of 10 of them realize that they either screwed up or, you know, there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I agree.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if there's people that haven't been charter fishing a lot, like, the standard's 20%. I mean, like, that's just my, how I approach it. But yeah. I'm also a charter mate, charter captain, and I've fished with a bunch of people all over the place. So it's just, that's at least my, like, baseline.
Right.
You know? No matter what, like, I already know that's what it's going to be regardless of how the day is.
Right.
But, you know.
And I think a lot of it too is being proactive before the trip. You know, it all starts with the office, or if it's just you, it's you explaining to the customer, hey, you know, the mate doesn't get any, you know, doesn't make money unless he's getting tipped. So, you know, standard gratuities, just like you're tipping a waiter or waitress, 18, 20%.
Yep.
And if you had a good day and you want to be, you know, want to be a nice person, just give them more money.
Yep.
But I think if you say it when they first call and explain it when you're explaining the prices, and then when you're calling to double check and make sure the trip's all scheduled and ready to go 2 to 3 days in advance or whatever it is, a week in advance, go over the pricing again with them, tell them, you know, tip amounts XYZ usually, and then by the time the day rolls around, you know, it should be keyed in their mind. But like you say, sometimes it starts out with one guy booking the trip and then it ends up being another guy paying for it and stuff gets crossed.
Mm-hmm.
So
I like kind of a different same thread, but like, you know, kind of a different side of it. I had jumped on just because there's a lot of, you know, guys that are mates or, you know, jumping on boats or whatever. And, you know, I had jumped on with a buddy, you know, he needed a mate, and it was like, cause the other guy had bailed out. And, so he's like, I don't have a check with your name on it for a tip, you know, cause it came right. The guys had paid up front, you know, the 20%. And I was like, yeah, no worries. Like, you know, I'll be fishing with you again. It was like July, right?
Right.
And so that was a two day trip. And then, so didn't, you know, he didn't have a check, which was fine. I was like, it's $400, dude. It's no big deal, you know? And, fast forward, fished another time with them, paid me for that one. And then, you know, fished a couple more times at the end of the season. You know, I kept him around. I was like, hey, like, you know, just, just wanted to stay current on that, like, you know, and by the end of the season, the owner was like, yeah, I already paid someone for those days. And I was like, well, what days are you talking about? You know? And he was like, yeah, well, I'd have to look at my records. And I was like, well, you know, we kind of like, you know, right. not that I didn't really care. At the end of the day, it's like, it was only $400, but I was like, you know, what days are you don't even know what days you're talking about that, like, that we fished. And so, you know, my records were better than his records. Cause he was like, oh, I think it was this day and this day. And I was like, well,
I know.
Can I had, you know, a good track record of right. what days I had fished, who they were with, you know, straight through. And I was like, you paid me for this day, this day, this day, but not these other 2 days. And, you know, so he was like, oh, okay. You know, not saying he was trying to stiff me, but, you know, he wasn't on the boat, you know,
right.
someone else was running yep. the boat for him. So it's a good thing to keep in mind. Like, if you're jumping around boat to boat, keep good records. I mean, obviously just from a fishing standpoint, it's good to keep records, but good to keep records on that kind of stuff, you know, just so that you know, like, where you stand, you know.
One thing I do in regards to records is, like, even if it's a boring ass day, I always take some pictures of just, like, you know, maybe you catch the first striper of the day, you get a picture of, like, them fighting it. And by the end of the season or whatever, you can kind of look back and, or later that week, if you're sending them the pictures, you can kind of remember, oh yeah, you know, those are the guys that, you know, you caught this with or caught that with. And, you know, if you're ever looking for money later in the year, you can, let me just pull that up and make sure I got the right date. You know, yep. I know I took some pictures that day.
Yep.
You know, and it's not like a rude way of being like, I know what day it was and you don't. You
yeah,
know,
exactly.
It's an easy way of just going back to it.
We do all our logs and check back with my mom at the office, like, weekly, monthly.
Right.
You know, it's important to keep track of all that stuff. You get so damn busy and you're mixing days and, you know.
Yeah, if you're just going off a straight memory, like, you're in trouble.
Yep.
And, you know, eventually it's going to happen. Eventually, like, you know, one of the, like, this, like, that situation was a perfect example of, like, how as a mate bouncing boat to boat, your days get mixed up and, you know, all of a sudden you're out $400. Like you said, it's might not be a lot of money and just, you know, in that small sense, but
right. when you add 3, 4, 5 of those together, you're talking money.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah. So boys, we just like wrapped 3 questions into that entire conversation.
All about lunch.
All about lunch.
I know what we need to talk about.
Hold on. Wait 1 sec. So, we've gone over some lunch options. Yep. That question was from Gut Bait. We all know who that is. Yeah. I'm sure he could be giving some serious lunch recommendations to us too. He's like,
I saw him
the king of the Italian sub dude. Oh, yeah.
I saw him at the end of the season. It was so funny. We had, like, you know, caught a short on Old Oil, and he was like just happened to be cruising the river and Popeye. Yeah. And, you know, Bill tossed him a whole bag of tuna steaks. He was with a couple of people. Looked like a rock star.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, I actually think I talked to him about that. The other question was from Jack Maloney 524. What do you do when and if a charter doesn't tip you enough? We covered that. Sportfish Bible, general, what are some strange charter stories, weird clients? I mean,
we talked about a few, but
we've already talked about a few. We have a few more. I'm sure we'll be able to weave a few more in there.
I feel like that too just warrants an entire day. Like, you know, just start to finish.
It also warrants an entire 30 rack. let's get into some, like, actual, like, tactical rigging sort of stuff.
It sounds fun.
Cool.
All right.
Cool.
I kind of like this whole hook styles.
Hooks.
So, G Bods.
So, we talked about this, actually, like, way back when. I don't think you posted the podcast.
Yeah.
We were kind of half in the bag and we were just rambling for like 4 hours straight. Remember that?
Yeah, we did start talking about it. You're right.
Yeah.
So hook styles. So should we just stick with like offshore tuna stuff?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what this is about for sure.
Yes.
So hook styles. Are you using different hooks when you're commercially tuna fishing versus recreationally tuna fishing and catch and release?
Let Dave go first.
So I do use different hooks for the two. If we are straight up, you know, commercial fishing, then I like to use even within the course of a day, sometimes I'll use, you know, two different style hooks on down rods with a lead. I do like a J hook. I just think that you get a more consistent bite, or hook set, I should say. And then like on a floater, I do the circle hooks. You just get, you know, it's an easy, let them eat. They're swimming away. You know, you set the hook on them, you know, like almost perfect every time. Is, you know, if you get that swimming away bite. So then when we go over to, you know, catch and release fishery, I'll try to switch over to all circle hooks. And, you know, sometimes you miss them, you know, like you, I think you guys even said, like, you had some spots in the spread, you know, specifically like those middle, when they eat though, like
the middle rod,
bait, it's just hard, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a weird amount of line to like, for them to eat the it.
Hook. Right. You
know, from like, the rod to the hook.
Yeah. It's not right. Like, even like the down rod, you can like, you know, you can kind of get on a little bit faster and like you get to it. But, like I missed an absolute like savage bite on the down rod, you know, on a circle hook earlier this year, just fish ate it, just sent the band into orbit. And, you know, just ended up getting tip wrapped, you know, and busted that one off. But, so, you know, like on a J hook on that bite, that fish is dying like 100%. Yeah. So, I think I've said this before, but so, J hooks, I really, really like the VMC Dynamics. I think it's an 8-aught, that I use for those. They're tiny, you know, they work good for stick baits, for live baits. You could even troll with them. You know what I mean? Like we were talking about trolling ballyhoos and stuff like that. Like it's kind of a universal hook. You could do a bunch of stuff with, which I think is important, like finding stuff that has a bunch of different uses, not just like, this is the hook we use for this. And like, all of a sudden you have, you know,
you're 40, re-rigging all day,
40 if hooks,
changing it up.
That,
yeah.
And that's one of the things I like is, you know, be able to like, you know, set your rods up in the morning and then they can be interchangeable, you know, like, you know, they're like, okay, this is the rod I'd love to have in this position. But if stuff got crazy and I had to send it out as my long rod, I, you know, I have enough line. You know, I'm comfortable with the way it's rigged, like all that stuff. If you have stuff that's really specifically rigged for, you know, one application, it can kind of throw you off if you get into a, like a little bit of a jam, you know, a hot bite or whatever. So VMC Dynamics for J hooks. And then I think we both were using, you guys were the ones that told me about it, but the circle hook is the quick rig. Charlie Brown's sick.
Sick little hooks. Yeah.
Yeah.
We use the Ninos. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, those I actually use the 8s too, and they're stealthy. They don't have as big of a gap, so if you get into some, you know,
big ones,
some real pigs, you're gonna, you know, you're probably not gonna get a great hook set. But when we had that like middle bank bite, like again, I don't know.
You
like,
tell whatever yeah. You say whatever you want to yeah. say, Dave.
I mean, yeah, I'm going to give you all the secrets. A couple more Bud Lights. I'm going to be giving you guys numbers.
You can just go to Facebook for numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. God.
So, yeah, I liked those 8-aughts for like when those little fish are
perfect.
Super stealthy. And, you know, I know a lot of guys like drop down like super low, you know, in hook size, especially like up north, like a lot of the...
Using a lot of 7-0 circle hooks.
Super Mutus, like really small super Mutus and stuff like that. So I figured if those guys use them, I can use them, you know. Yeah. So those 8-aught Charlie Browns were pretty good. And then we used the 9-aughts like you guys use.
Yep.
I think those two were pretty much the go-to hooks. And then just your kite hooks, you know.
Yeah, I do like the Trocars. I still like the Trocars. Absolutely. But The tips bend very easily, and they do. We have broken some, and we've gut hooked fish for them too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like probably a good commercial hook, I guess. You know, you're going to hook them. I mean, last year we were using Trocars all year, and Christ, we probably hooked almost every single fish, got them all the way to the boat, and either, you know, got them or chafed them or very minimal like hook pulls.
We broke five.
Broke the actual hook.
Yeah.
We probably chafed off another 15 at least last year.
Yeah, I still like that hook. This year though, just what we did on our boat, we fished those 9-0 Charlie Browns every single day. It didn't matter what day it was.
Yep.
We just changed our leader size.
And we did have some, you know, some bites that we missed, but the bites that we hooked, geez, I mean, we probably had a at least an 80%, I'd say probably an 80% landing.
Yeah.
You know, and I only remember chafing off, like truly chafing off two all year, which is insane if you think about it.
Yeah.
Out of whatever, 50 something giants and a lot of small fish.
I think
we did pull some. We probably pulled 10 hooks.
One position that I found that I didn't love. Like,
are we still
one,
talking tuna fishing?
Yeah.
The middle floater.
Yeah, middle floater with a lead.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes far floater, you know, with a bigger fish, you know, pulling hooks like deep into the first run, you know, stuff like that. Just it usually with mackerel on the high floater, you know?
Yeah, I mean, out of all the fish we like missed, it was probably 75% were on mackerel and 25 on herring.
Yeah.
Probably less than that on herring.
Yeah.
Because the hooks have so much trouble getting out of the mackerels, and I think they chase them so fast. And
back to how we swap? We don't really swap.
We don't swap.
Just because we like setting the hook on the fish like a specific way with a circle hook, and mm-hmm. we do it the same every single day. So,
with charters,
systematic
with a circle hook with charters. You know, they don't know what they're doing. Let's just make that clear. Like, they really don't know what they're doing for the most part. And, you know, they're not always keeping tension on the fish. And they're not always able to, like, keep them in a pinwheel. And, you know, it allows the fish to change directions a lot. And that circle hook definitely helps with chafing fish off.
And it helps with slack line,
too. Slack line, yeah. It helps when you get into an issue with like a lobster pod or someone else's anchor or your own anchor, because, you know, as long as there's some even thumb pressure, I feel fine. Like, once the hook's set, you know, all the way up to strike at one point during the initial run and then bring it back down or whatever if it gets tangled in something. I mean, few of the fish we were watching bite videos. And, like, I had to go all the way down to, like, almost free spool, complete free spool, mm-hmm. with just, like, a thumb on it. I was watching the one with you and Flip, and, like, that rod went into free spool probably 6 times. It was still eating doing under the corner of the boat. And a bunch of times it was almost completely slack, and the hook stayed in there fine.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would happen with J-hook, especially if it's in the thing's, you know, in the thing's mouth. Maybe if it was gut hook did probably stay in, but...
No hook's perfect.
No.
At the end of the day, it's just preference. I think the majority still all use J hooks.
Yep.
You know, for sure.
I think a lot of people are scared to try circle hooks.
Yeah.
Honestly, you could put your drag at 40 pounds and leave it in the rod holder and hook probably just as many, maybe a tiny bit less than you would if you like fish the light drag and do everything that we're doing on the hookup.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, there was so many bites this year that like you and I just like jumped to, and like watching the video, it never even took a line off the reel.
Mm-mm.
Like the rubber band snapped and we were already up to probably 35 pounds. The rod started going and we were on.
Yeah, but that said though, like, you know, if you've done it enough,
if you know they're running away.
You can feel the line loading up before it even comes off. The right. spool starts to turn the other way.
Yeah.
You know, so like a lot of it's that too, and just feel. And I just feel more confident with the lighter. I mean, I've had a lot of practice with it, you know, up north, and we've been doing it here for years. I'm just confident that you're going to get a much, much better hook placement more consistently doing that.
Right.
It's not whether you're going to hook them. It's where you're going to hook them.
Yep.
You know?
And if you get obviously obvious result of that is, are you going to land that fish?
Right.
Yeah. Like, you know, so many times you hook them with, like, on a J hook, you fight them for 2 hours, you chafe them off. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Very, very rarely this past season, you know, we experiment like everyone else and we change hooks sometimes season to season, but just specific to this last season, fishing those hooks, we lost very, very few at the boat. Mm-hmm. Most of the ones we lost were in the first 20 minutes.
Yep.
Most of them in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, probably not even.
Not even.
Like first run, in the middle of the first run, or on the bite, or, yeah, like you just get off the ball and start kind of chasing them for a second, then you pull the hook.
Yeah. But I'd rather that and get back on the bite than be there for 2 hours and pull a hook, 100%. You know? So, yes, it's frustrating when your only bite of the day is like a meow.
Right.
And you pull the hook.
Yep.
But would that have been a 2 hour heartbreaker? You know? So I don't know. No hook's perfect, but that's kind of our take on it. If I'm really gonna fish like a perfect catch and release hook, obviously I'm gonna fish something that has less of an offset.
Right.
So if you don't want to fish that Charlie Brown or you have another hook that you like, I would just, during those days, get something that's as close to an inline hook as possible. Those Mustad Demons are nice. The Trocars, they sell inline too. They're a little bit sharper, so you could, like Taylor said, you know, like Frank fishes like 20, 30 pounds of drag at the bite, and that's what he fishes.
Right.
You know?
It's all what you're comfortable in. At the end of the day, you know, you're going to miss, especially with smaller fish, you're going to miss bites. Those bigger fish seem to almost always get hooked. Whether they stay on or not, it's another question. But like usually the hook rips out of the bait perfectly and ends up somewhere in the fish's mouth or wherever. And, you know, there's no perfect hook. It's however you want to fight the fish, however you want to,
yep,
you know, where you are trying to get the hook set at the end of the day. If you're just getting into it and you got your commercial permit, I would just say fish J-hooks and leave the drag a little bit less than 40 pounds. And, you know, most likely you're going to miss a lot of bites as far as like you seeing the bite happen, and you're the rod's just going to load up and you're going to be on if you're just getting into it. But once you are fishing for years and years, you'll start to actually, you know, see the balloon go down and see the line tighten up, and that's when you can probably start getting into more of a circle hook game. And, you know, I think this year especially, we started changing how we would go up on the drag. Like if the fish was clearly running away, Brian and I were going up to strike like fairly quickly and like hammering them with good drag, making sure that the hook was set in the corner, and then just backing it off after he ran for 5-10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure that the hook was like in there good, so that when we did have to go up to 40 pounds, 50 pounds, 60 pounds later in the fight, we knew the hook was in them good somewhere.
Yep.
So
yeah. The answer is there's many answers.
Yes. But yeah, we didn't change hook styles. Dave changed hook styles on the private boats he was on.
I've changed hook styles like so many times over the years. I mean, but, you know, 20, 15 years ago, there really wasn't that many hooks to choose from, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, everyone was using live baits, and then, you know, kind of a bunch of
circle hooks got bigger. And
yeah, then a bunch of more options came out. Like I used salt waters for a while, which they don't make anymore, but they're still a good hook. I used the Gorillas for a while.
That's a great hook too.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good hooks out there. I just like that one. And they're cheap too, which is nice. You know what I mean? Those VMCs are like, I want to say they're like $2 maybe.
Yeah, that is cheap.
Here's one thing. They're very cheap.
Yeah, buy a 15 pack. I think 15 pack is like $30 or something like that. So pretty darn cheap.
You got me thinking about a little tip that we started doing this year. Instead of just hooking the hook on your first guide on the rod, like 90% of people do out there, like moving spot to spot or checking lines, like to really preserve the tip of that hook,
we just been like wrapping a 64 band around that first guide and then hook the hook on the band. So there's like no possible way it can rattle against the rod or the guide or like knock any of that tip off. The reason I said that was those VMC hooks you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I had a couple of them fishing. I fished them a couple times this year and, the hooks just were like, I would like try to put another tip on it or like, you know, resharpen it, whatever. They're just really hard to maintain a tip once it's gone.
Oh yeah.
That's why, you know, that's why they're cheap.
Yeah. And then they're done as soon as the, like, that's my thought on like on hooks is when they start looking like worn, they're just gone. And it's just like, it's the last piece between you and the fish. You know what I mean? Like why waste your time on a, you know, trying to salvage a $2 hook, you know?
Exactly.
And I don't feel so bad about doing that with, again, with a cheap hook versus something that's $5, you know, again, still not a huge ton of money, but if you're throwing hooks away, three of them at a whack,
it adds up fast.
You know, and like that is one of my gripes with like the with that Charlie Brown hook is that it does rust fast.
One thing we did to fix that is magic marker, the whole hook point, the barb, and then like right around where the welded ring was in the eye, because that's like another spot that was rusting. Mm-hmm. You would just magic marker that. That's like a top, like tuna fish can't see the hook now. No, but what happens is the corrosion starts.
That's the magic of a marker.
The corrosion starts with the marker first.
Yeah.
You know, and then wears into the finish of the hook.
I'm not fishing like every day like you guys. So like one thing that I do is like I cut all the leaders down. I think I've said this before, but I cut all the leaders down so that they're not getting stored, you know, with a hook point chafing
the
leader for a week, you know what I mean? Until you go fishing next time. And it's great practice because, you know, you cut them all off and then you can actually like wash them and dry them, as ridiculous as it sounds. It really helps cut down on that, like that corrosion. And,
right.
Even sometimes you can't help it then, you know what I mean? You still look at them and they're still all rusted and they go back. I don't throw them away because like if you get into like a crazy day like we had, you know, late in the season, it's all short fish pretty much, and you just like, you know what, like any hook will do.
Yeah, you're like, some of these fish you're cutting the leader and just putting another hook on.
Yep, exactly.
You know,
so like, and same with the leaders too. Like if I, you know, I start with new leaders every day, but I save all those old ones, you know, cut them all down, and then by the end of the season I have a bag with like a bunch of cut down leaders ready to rock and roll. So when you get into those hot fall bites and you're catching, you know, a couple of fish a day or, you know, more, you know, like on great days like we had, you know, then you can reach into those, that bag that's, you know, leaders that have already been in the water. So
that trip for me is forever known as the Glosterman trip.
Oh my God.
Dude.
So good.
Hold on, before we get into that trip, can I just say one thing we do that we did do differently between commercial and wreck fishing last year was our fluorocarbon.
Killing them.
No, it was our, yes. Yeah. It was our fluorocarbon. We fished on recreational / catch and release giant days. We fished 130. And then we bumped up, you know, to either 150 or 170 for the commercial days.
Or 180.
Or 180. And, you know, just to make sure that when we did hook that fish commercially that, you know, it was almost impossible to lose them as long as he was hooked right. So,
yeah, it's pretty hard to lose them with 180 and a circle hook.
Yep. And yeah, we had a few fish this year, you know, that if we weren't using that heavier leader, we would have lost them. Usually it was because we'd harpoon them and he'd take off and we're fighting them on, you know, on the dart and the rod, and the dart's getting spun up in the leader. It's just a, you know, helicopter underwater, gorilla panic.
Yeah.
So talk about the Gloucester Charter. I just want to point that out because he asked about the hooks. I just want to talk about what the only difference we did do between those.
I did lose one on 200 this year with, I think it was 200, with a, you know, 9-0 Jobu, which was an absolute heartbreaker.
Yeah.
Like I was like, this thing's dead. He's going to die.
He chafed him off?
Dude, I've never seen a fish hit. I've never seen a fish hit like this in my life, you know.
Is that the video you put, they backing down like in the rain or whatever? Yeah.
We can't, like, just like a slow day off of Nauset, you know, nothing's really going on. It's been a bite there like for a while, and then guys kind of started, the weather was coming in the afternoon, guys started leaving, and like I'm in the cockpit and I like kind of like peek up. I'm like, we're kind of like heading back. I can already, like, I can feel it. It's like nothing's really, we had one short in the morning and we're heading back, and I'm like, I just kind of poked my head like around like the port side, and in front of us is just, I haven't seen this all day. It is just sheer waters and humpbacks, like all piled up, bubble feeding, ripping through 1,000 sheer waters. And I was like, I like look up at like in the bridge, Alan and Tyler up there. And I was like, this looks pretty good. And they're like, they like look back, eyes like bulging out. They're like, yeah, this is good. And we go through. I have a picture of this, of the screen. I sent it to you guys. I mean, conservatively 30 fish on the screen.
Yeah.
And we, like, I can see the planer rod coming tight, and I hop off of like the raised platform, like by like the, like where the mezzanine is, and absolutely eat it going to the rock. Feet out. I slide all the way up, knees up under the gunwale, pop up, get tight on the fish, and it just starts, you know, I get tight on it and it just starts running. And just never
stopped. And running.
Dude, it was, you know, I had 60 something pounds of drag up on him, and like he just, like that video of us backing down, you know, we're doing 5 knots in reverse and he's still taking line, and we were, his first run was probably 900 yards.
Ugh.
It was insane.
Gross.
I've never seen anything like it. It was awesome. But you know, but we chafed him off. So I like, similarly, I was like, you know, if you chafe him off, we chafed him off in like 20 minutes, we were going to chafe him off at some point. You know right. what I mean? Like, why do we want to fight him for 3 hours?
If they're hooked wrong and it goes across the top jaw, it's done.
That's what happened. Like, you could see, like, when we got it back, like, it was, you know, it was bent a couple inches up. So, like, you know, that hook just kind of caught something, like, deeper in his mouth. But, boy, was that a big fish.
That's crazy.
I've never seen anything like it. I don't even know if I want to catch that one. Yeah. I'm frightened.
Those are called uncatchables.
Yeah, that's why I texted that to Brian. Yeah. This album wasn't uncatchable.
Those are usually the ones you hook at Piget Hill and the current's so strong you end up in like Chatham by the time you land.
Yeah, that's where we were headed.
Oh,
it was crazy. I was still blown away, like ripping back, like, you know. You know, then we had to turn. We turned on him. That was a thing. We ended up having to like spin around because he was still taking line. And every time I'd try to pull on him, he'd feel that extra pressure and just rip off. So Tyler turned on him, and you know, we ended up popping him off.
I was like that one that hit like a freight train when all three of us were with OG.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That one ate and was like going away. It was
menace.
Going to freaking PEI.
The nice thing was that he picked a nice lane.
Nice slot path through the fleet.
You know, like, there was a good...
All he had Unlike to do the one the we lost way. Before that.
Yeah, that sucked.
When we lost before that, I was like, I'm going to do circles around this anchor ball right here.
Yeah, that didn't have an anchor ball on his anchor line.
Yeah, that was like the windless classic.
Ball. Windless ball. I love a good windless ball on a Sunday afternoon.
That was the classic, you know, Stellwagen Bank thing this year. It was like Silverton's fishing straight off of the bow. Like, you know, like... I was like, if that guy has to get off his ball, it's going to take a half an hour.
At least it's only like 130 feet of anchor line.
Dude, all I can picture quarter. Is like the fish running at someone like that and him being like, like a windlass.
You know that scene?
The windlass trying to pull the anchor.
You know that scene from Austin Powers when he's like, it takes like 20 seconds for him to get over. He goes, how about no?
Yes.
That's all I can picture.
You crazy Dutch bastard.
Oh god,
I love gold.
Put it in the skin box. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
right? Gold member.
I'm still laughing inside. I'm just not laughing out loud.
Yeah.
What other questions you got?
So we've actually covered quite a bit. I know we didn't do this in like question one here's your answer format, and we kind of went off on
stories we probably want to mention.
Yeah, I mean, I think before that we should do maybe start up one more question.
Okay.
Dave, would you like me to hit pause?
No, I thought I put them, the Krispies outside.
They're in the fridge.
I'll take another Krispy.
Yeah.
We're taking it.
So the next question, boys.
Are we recording now? We're good?
Oh, yeah, we're good.
All right.
The next question is from Peter Aikens, who actually...
Good dude.
We had the pleasure of meeting at a seminar last winter? Two winters ago. Yeah. Anyways, Peter's question.
I don't know why he's asking questions. He catches more.
Yeah, you know? I know. It's a good topic of conversation. Yeah.
I think that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah.
Topic of conversation.
So bait question mark, lead sizes question mark, and then do you use herring after its mouth opens? Well, I'll just nip that one in the butt and say no, we don't. Unless we're in absolute desperation. It's the only herring we have.
If it's like slack tide and he's still swimming and his mouth's open, yes.
Yep.
And I'll usually try to put that one on the down rod so I can keep an eye on him. So you can
just check
on
him. Yeah. Or just kill it and use it dead.
Yeah.
So that answers that. Bait question mark? What do you think he means by that?
I think just talking about bait.
I think it's a bait exclamation point.
Was it bait exclamation point?
Yeah, bait exclamation point.
Bait exclamation point. So just,
like just discussion about bait.
Just a general bait. Well, I guess, what's your favorite bait? Because this year was different.
What's my favorite bait?
Yeah.
What bait do I get the most joy out of catching one on, or which bait do I like to use the most?
I mean, you answer it however you see fit.
I mean, when one eats a dead bait, it's fun.
Nothing like it, right?
You know?
You just feel like so complete inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Can we talk about a good dead bait story I had this year? It was actually the last trip of the year out, way out like east of southeast corner. They were eating butterfish like crazy. Fish everywhere, like tens of
dude,
tens
it was,
of thousands.
There was like 3 weeks where it was just nonsense.
Like conservatively, I'm gonna say there's 50,000 fish on the surface at once. The last day of the season in the morning, there was as far as we could see in every direction, boils of tunas, and everybody was just hooking up, spinning rod guys, trolling guys, bait guys. It was insane. There's probably 40 boats and 30 something had multiple fish. But they're eating butterfish, so they're really hard to hook. And we ended up with like a bunch of kite bites that were like spitting the bait out. We ended up getting one finally eat a mackerel. And then we caught a like 4.5-inch male herring in the morning on the Sabiki rig. And I'm like, I'm just going to throw that in the cooler. I'm like, you never know.
That's what Claire calls mine, the 4.5-inch male herring.
So this thing, like, for some reason, in the back of my head, I'm like, it's the closest thing we have to a butterfish.
Yep.
Right? And I rigged, like, just this. This is the smallest stick bait in my life. It was a borderline, like, Arkansas shiner. Okay? Actually, those would have probably worked great.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was like a 5-inch stick herring with like a little tiny, I think it was like a 1/2-ounce lead, and just hooked him in the back, center down. I put the rubber band on the guide, turned around, there was like 5 more fish on the screen. And this was after having a live mackerel. Like we probably marked over 100 fish that day, and 30 of them in a row looking at the mackerel, wouldn't touch it. I put the stick herring down that was like almost the profile as a butterfish, and I put the rubber band on, went over, there was 3 fish on the screen exactly like the mackerel lookers looked, and looked back and the freaking rod bent over. It was like immediately. And then an hour later, same thing, but we didn't have any more herring or any other baits, so we're in 450 feet of water. I put a 2-pound lead on a Sabiki rig and sent it to the bottom, and I caught a whiting that was like 9 inches long. Put that on the down rod. First group of fish marked, bam, on again. Like they did not want to eat a mackerel. They didn't want to chase a mackerel down.
So I think at the end of the season, like when they're fattening up like that, their
just
goal
lazy.
Is, yeah, their goal is expend as little energy as possible. So right. Like in the summer, they want, you know, herring. You know, that's like what they're cruising around trying to eat all the time. But at the end of the season, they're like, I'll just grub the bottom all day long. And that's what happened like in Chatham. Like you'd see like throughout the day, like there'd be fish just like nose down, like in the bottom.
Yep.
And they'd be hard to get up. You needed something you know, that's why the pogies I think were working so well, is like they need, you needed something like flashy to like really pull them up off the bottom.
Yep.
I think they were eating stripers there actually on the bottom, but
it's crazy. I mean, we did have a lot of high mac bites.
Yeah.
But I don't know if those were like different feeding fish, if those are fish that were just like coming into the schools. Because I noticed the fish that, like most of the high mackerel fish we caught didn't have, I guess some of them had some butterfish in their stomach. Yeah,
they had them in there.
But it's almost like you just had to eventually fool one, and you had to be in a school of several hundred fish to get them to eat.
Most of the ones we did get on mackerel, though, had like a mixed bag in their stomach.
Like, I know we're going like way, but I just want to talk about.
I think even the course of a day, like, you know, you have like two different, like out east, you saw it. It's like in the morning when the fish are up, they're active, like you'll get high, you'll get
bites on anything.
Yeah, like whatever. But then like as the fish kind of like settle in, the, you know, light changes.
They get kind of smart.
Yeah. And then they're just, then they go back into like, all right, like don't use up any energy, just cruise around, mouth open, eat anything that swims. You know, like across your face. And that's why, like, they'll eat a whiting. And I think that's why they eat butterfish at that time, too. You know what I mean? It's just because those little things probably aren't the best swimmers with those tiny little tails. Yeah,
like, it's like mini ocean sunfish.
But I think, you want to know what I was thinking about the other day? I think, like, when, like, next season when the fish are out east like that, I think if you kind of like anchored up in a, like, kind of a strategic
butterfish.
Chunked butterfish,
yeah,
I think you'd crush it.
Yeah.
Old school.
Which I mean, that's what they're doing down right now, down off
New York and Rhode Island.
Rhode Island, chunking butterfish. And I honestly think that those fish that we had, we were getting giants mixed with small fish.
Yeah, we hooked some tanks.
I almost wondered if, you know, they're so used to eating butterfish up by us. Now they're seeing these. I wish we chunked butterfish and tried it out.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going way off topic.
Next year.
Let's go back to the question.
Bait question mark.
I love
so. I guess he was wondering about, was he wondering about stick baits, or was that the different guy?
I think it was just like a bait.
No, another guy did ask like stick bait, dead bait versus fresh live, turning marks into bites. I think we can just kind of like
go over both of those.
Go over all of it.
Was Peter's question about,
it was about lead.
About lead size.
Yeah. Bait. Well, bait was his first question, which I think we just kind of answered. I mean, that's a favorite bait is hard to.
I can tell you what we fished.
I mean, herring is their favorite food. I like fishing herring the most. You get the best hookup ratios from what we've seen anyway. But at the same time, mackerel's a lot easier to keep alive.
Yep.
And if the fish are moving fast, it's a bait that's a lot easier to like drift with and deploy fast on the fly and all that. And that really caught us a lot of fish in October, you know? So... Mm-hmm. It's hard to answer that. It's just really what's just
squid,
kind of
squid are awesome baits.
Squid are great. Yep. It's all good. Just whatever they're eating.
That's, I mean, as far as like what we like ran for almost the majority of the year, the ideal spread was a high mac and then just two herring, one, you know, middle water column or a little deeper, and then one closer to the bottom. That was like our
on the bank.
That was like our bread and butter spread, I guess, all year. And we got quite a few mackerel, high mac bites. And then the days we couldn't catch mackerel, which there were some of those days, we were fishing three herring, and vice versa, we were fishing three mackerel several days.
Yeah.
And the days that the squid were horrible, we were fishing usually a high mac way out and two squid, or high squid, medium squid, deep squid, you know?
Yeah.
I love a little bluefish, you know, like a little 4-pound bluefish, 5-pound bluefish.
We didn't even touch on pogies either.
Pogies.
Oh, yeah.
Down Chatham. I got a bite on a deep pogie. Have you guys ever got one on a deep
pogie? We have, but we don't usually run them that much.
Yeah, see, that guy was like, I've never got a bite on a, you know, weighted pogie. I don't know how they... How'd they do down there?
Swimming around.
He didn't do well.
I mean, he did his job. He swam right into the tuna fish's mouth.
Admirably.
He didn't do very well.
No, he had a tough day. But, you know, I was, like, surprised because I just didn't think they'd, like, last in the current with the lead and, you know, ripping them
off. I mean, they're hardy.
Yeah.
You know, it's just they swim, like, they're cross-eyed. Yeah. I mean, talk about like these guys having phantom breakoffs in the bay. Like, I think half of those breakoffs were because the pogies swam their leader in a knot.
I 1,000,000% agree. I untied 3 pogey knots in one day this
year. Yeah, I mean, we had pogies swimming over top shots and pogies like doing a perfect granny knot like in the middle of the leader.
I had a
That's impressive. That's like not easy to do.
They're tough for the tunas to like catch too. You know, yeah. Like, they're like kind of like squirrely. I remember I had like day at Pekin Hill, crystal clear, and like fish were just like everywhere. I probably had 15, 20 boils like on baits, but like I'm up in the tower and I'm like, when are we gonna hook one of these things?
Yeah.
But like one of them came up and literally, the pogies are like just cruising around so fast. He like rolled off the back of, I'm up there watching. I'm like, this stupid pogey. Like, and we were trying to like
bluefish the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We were I was like, I think we need to like blind these things to like stop them from seeing these approaching tunas. But
pogey on the kite's pretty hard to freaking.
Yeah. Pogey on the kite's legit.
Beat too. That's.
We had a great really kite bite on the day we were out.
Yeah.
Glosterman Day.
Glosterman Day. Did you know he didn't? Taylor
Dude,
didn't know.
I had no idea they were twins.
What?
I had no clue.
No idea they were twins.
Twins, Basil.
Were they identical twins? They weren't identical twins, were they?
They look less identical now than like in college. They were. You couldn't tell them apart.
No way.
To my buddies.
All right. Let me. Let's do. We're gonna do a fish. We're gonna tell the tale of the. The Glosterman twins. And
then we're going to get back to lead.
Yes, we'll get back to lead.
Should we just hammer lead real quick?
Yeah. All right, fine. Lead first. Lead sizes.
Use the least amount of lead.
Exactly.
As possible to keep your top shot straight.
Yes.
Down, if possible.
And you use like your shadow line rod kind of as a guide. As a guide,
right.
Yeah. You know, like look at that.
Or your bait rod.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like what is this, required to stay straight up, and then you can stagger kind of less as you go out. You know, it might be a little bit less vertical, but you're getting the benefit of a little bit less lead on that bait out there.
And one thing that I was just talking to Bri about this, like one story I guess to come off of that conversation is
two stories. I just thought of another one.
Oh, another one. So we were about ready to leave one day. This year, and had like a big pile of fish come on the screen, and that kept us there for an extra hour longer than we wanted to be. And, I kept having fish streaking up on the down rod, and I didn't change the lead over on the down rod, and it was now like basically slack tide. I think it was just past slack tide, so we were about ready to start swinging, and fish were just coming up, and they wouldn't eat it. And then we start marking them for like 15, 20 minutes. And we're like, all right, we got to go. It's like time to go home. So I reel in the far rod. And all of a sudden we marked a pair. They came up on the down rod again and didn't eat it. So I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to fire this rod that I just reeled in. I'm just going to fire this out. Put a little tiny lead on just enough to get that bait down to the depth that they're coming up to. And I just put it to the same depth as the down rod. But instead of having that 24-ounce lead that I had on before, I put on a little 6-ounce lead and shot it down. And it wasn't in the water for like 20 seconds, and it was eaten. I got it just far enough away so that it may have not have been tangled to the down rod. Like it was. There was no current, so like the wind was almost just blowing the balloon out a little bit. As soon as it got a little bit away from the boat, it went down. And honestly, I think that bite was 100% because of changing the lead out to a smaller lead. I think they were just, these fish aren't dumb. So when they're chasing a bait up, sometimes you'll see them on the fish finder. If your bait's at 75 feet, you'll mark them streaking all the way up to 40. And, if your fish finder is good enough, you can mark your actual bait moving and you'll see your bait swim up 20, 30, 40 feet up. So by the time they get up there chasing them, they now are like swimming into the lead and they see that.
Or the bait stops.
Or the bait stops and turns upside down and it becomes unnatural to the, to the tuna. And they don't want to eat it. And you can get away with like, a stick bait. The thing doesn't move. I probably should have put one of those down that day, but I think putting the real light lead allowed the herring to swim away more normal, more naturally, and the fish ate it. So
one lead story that we have as well is we're legitimately visually hand feeding fish up in Canada and had at least 20 on the screen, like all, you know, 500 plus pound fish that we couldn't get them to eat. Like we got them with invisible sight hand feeding, like right when we pulled the net up, and then they went down around 50 feet and then we're like trying, you know, send mackerel down, whatever, literally trying everything to get a bite. And then I don't even know how many ounces it was. They fish those steel shots that they cut down. Yeah. They're like 16, 20 ounces a piece probably. So we picked a herring out of the net that was still alive, put it down at like 50 feet with a lead on. That lead was in the water maybe 5 to 10 seconds. Fish gone, fish finder completely clean, nothing on the screen whatsoever. Reeled the lead up. The lead literally broke the surface of the water and the fish came back on the screen. And then it got eaten.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I think especially like on the bank, like in areas that like guys fish a lot, middle bank, southwest corner, I think that they know, like as ridiculous as it sounds, like they know like there's like this is a spot that like, you know, there's stuff like in the water column, there's anchor lines, there's lots of lines, like they're seeing that stuff, you know what I mean? So that's why like on a day where there's a lot of boats, it's the guys that are really paying attention to like their gear that are getting the bites dropping down and in leader size, paying attention to the lead, not just throwing a 32 ounce there, you know, and just fishing it all day, you know, dropping the leader size down, like, you know, in the fleet of boats, the guys that are taking their time to, you know, tailor the gear down are getting the bites there. But when the fish come through, like they know, like, all right, you know, you can't possibly imagine if there's 100 boats fishing, you know, from northwest corner down to middle bank, that those fish aren't feeling that pressure and like recognizing their stuff in the water there. So something like a lead, I'm guaranteed that they're, you know, they're sensing in the water. So
sometimes they'll look at the lead.
I've had
watch them.
It's
crazy. Nothing worse.
Have had other species eat the lead too. Anyway, is that enough about lead?
I think so. I mean,
we paint our like lead black too.
As far as like size leads, we use from like the most common, I'm going to say, is 16s, 20s, 24s that we use. But some days we'll use 12s, 8s,
nothing.
32s, nothing. We used a lot of 32s actually this year because, you know, those moon tides, we were fishing 32s or sometimes, I mean, some of the Peaked Hill drifts, I had 5 pounds of lead on to keep it down deeper.
Sometimes when they get really, guys were fishing like crazy amounts of lead down there.
Yeah, we were fishing sword lead, daytime sword lead. But one thing that like I'll do sometimes, like when the fish are like really finicky and you still need a lot of lead, is I'll do 2 small lead, you know, just like one pull apart, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I find that to be helpful.
Yep. We'll do that a few times. Yeah. Or the ball sack.
I never got one of those. Tangle said he was going to make me one.
I liked like, you know, putting a lead on normal and then just taking another lead and just putting it on that band that's dangling off.
I thought
you're like still only on one. You still only have one band, so when the fish eats, it just breaks off. But yeah, we got one on the ball sack.
See, sometimes I feel like I've never been down there to witness this myself, but I always wonder if they clank it, you know, if they're down there.
If you're sack.
I don't know. It didn't seem to matter.
I can ask Claire if my sack clanks.
What'd you ask it right now?
I think that pretty much covers that.
Yeah.
For the most part. Let's get back to the Glosterman story, and then I think that'll kind of carry us out of here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who wants to start? First off, I can't believe you didn't know. I can't believe you didn't know they were twins.
I can't believe it either.
So
did you know they were brothers?
Shocked. Nope.
I thought you didn't know they were brothers.
I thought they were buddies, dude.
Dude, what?
I know, it's crazy.
So like backstory, a few of my buddies from college I played lax with in college were supposed to go up to Canada for a Seabros annual PEI trip.
Yeah.
And so this is going to be their first time going up there. And so they were all fired up. I've been, you know, sending them pics, and they've been seeing like videos like all winter. So they were like, just, you know, especially this year, like jonesing to go. And then as we got closer and closer, and it looked kind of like less and less like it was going to be feasible and we were going to get up there.
Because of COVID.
Yeah. You know, then we somehow, I don't even know how the idea got pitched. Oh, I think actually they said, like, jokingly, like, the twins were like, we'll just come to Marshfield and we'll just go, like, fish off the beach or something like that. And I was like, well, if you guys want to come here, we could go fishing here, you know, like,
yeah.
And I was like, I'll meet chat with Bri. And so we ended up, you know, booking a few days on Fortuna. And luckily, I think we actually booked 2 days that we bumped to 3 days.
Yeah, we had to cancel like a traveling client because of weather.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys end up being able to get out like a day early.
Yeah, because we were supposed to be our days were supposed to be Thursday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
And Thursday got blown out.
And we went Friday.
We went Friday, which was someone else's original date, exactly. But he couldn't come with the weather.
We got blown out Saturday, and then we fished Sunday.
Yeah.
Well, we really got blown out the entire days. Which is what made it so much was hilarious.
Yeah, because like that was the best part, is like these guys were like, we don't even care. Like we're, yeah. You know.
Paint the picture on the twins. Like, they're alpha males, but they're not exactly fishermen.
No, they're not. So, like...
I'm shaking my head. They, no.
I'm trying to get to why it was funny when they started yelling, we're Gloucestermen.
Awesome guys. Like, I've been friends with them forever. But, like, I've taken them out fishing before down in Rhode Island.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
My buddy has a center console there. We'd go like shark fishing once a year or something like that. My joke was always like, is the make a wish, take a city slicker fishing, you know?
Yeah.
So like, that's basically, you know, I always tell them, I'm like, you just can't wear like no Adidas sandals,
no white jeans, yeah, which was still done anyway. Yeah,
so no skinny jeans on the boat, you know, like we're not drinking Vuv. Okay. You know, but, so these guys like great dudes, but like, they've definitely never gone tuna fishing before.
Yeah.
So it was hysterical to put them on the boat on Friday morning when we left the dock.
Yeah, we gave it a little look-see.
Yeah. Just a little peek, and we had to turn around.
It was like conservative Northwest 25 to 30.
More than that, dude.
Maybe more.
That was the first. That was the day.
Oh, in the morning Jesse it was like 35 in the morning.
Yeah, it was like 10 to 12 on a peak at Hill, like legit from direct from the horse's mouth.
we probably like once we got,
we like, went like 7 miles.
Yeah, once we got off the edge there, we were probably in eights.
Yeah, it was gross.
You know, it was like 3 to 5s, like for once we got, you know, past the SA, doable, you know, not comfortable, but doable.
Yeah.
And, but then once we got off the edge, you know, that was gross.
Yeah, it was.
And, it just was like, it wasn't going to be possible to fish, you know? So right. That was the killer. I was like,
and that day was an open day. That day was a commercial.
Yep.
Commercial day. So it was,
so
like,
we turned around and went back.
Turned around, went back, had a couple of breakfast sangies, regrouped.
Went to the Lucky Finn.
Lucky Finn, sandwiches, coffee.
Great coffee.
Then we
great Sandy's.
Oh, yeah. It was great. Reassessed at what, like 10, 11 o'clock?
Yep. I think we left at, I don't know, right around 11 probably.
So we have these city slickers on the boat. We've now...
And my buddy Glenn, by the way.
Wasn't there the Glenn's first day, unfortunately.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he was only there the second day.
Yeah, so we have city slickers, rough conditions, knock their teeth in for about an hour.
It was rough.
But they did great.
They were fine. Yeah. Like, that was, like, I'm actually very glad it happened that way, because then I was like, all right, anything less than this, they can truly handle. Yeah. So we'll be able to sneak out at some point today.
Like, we can't handle anymore.
We knew the wind was going to die around noon.
Yeah. And it did. And yep. We timed it. We went out on the back side of it. It was still kind of gnarly. We got to our bait spot, and we legitimately landed in a yellow jacket's nest full of tuna fish. Yeah. We only had like 4 hours to fish.
Yeah.
You know, we were like, oh, you know, it's Hail Mary, one spot. This is all we're going to get.
Right.
You know?
We got there at like 1 o'clock probably.
I mean, yep. We were planning on pushing to a different spot, but we were just rolling in there to catch bait and
right. Just
happened upon, I mean, one of the crazier bites I've seen.
Some of the most savage surface feeds. We had, dude... There was fish almost jumping over the pulpit of the boat.
I was, you know, at one point I was grabbing I was pulling the hooks off, you know, we were stretching 2 liters and I'm pulling the hooks off and they're literally next to me. You know, I could have just reached over and gaffed them, but it was.
Can we discuss, like, what is,
could use the turtle net.
What is, yeah, speaking of turtle net, what does Jason call it when, like, shit starts getting, like, out of hand? He's like,
Well, he says danger.
Yeah, he goes, danger, team shit show. So we had like a danger. You guys remember we had a danger team shit show moment right off the rip. Like we jigged like 2 strings of bait and then like we set up wrong and stuff. Mm-hmm. And we're just like,
tuners were everywhere.
We spent like a good 20 minutes just watching them air out.
We were
out,
so
like,
not ready to so put baits not ready out
at all.
You know, we're like, oh, we're going. We still have a few more miles, so we got to start putting baits out.
Yep.
And it just happened so fast. It was like, we're done catching bait.
Yeah. Like, it was a complete, like, it was like the best whirlwind for those kids to experience, like right away. It was immediate action, like totally made the wait worth it.
It was short lived, but I mean, probably one of the best bites I've seen in a very short window. I mean, I don't even remember
how many.
We had a bunch of suckers. They were all like 50 to
70
inch fish. So like we missed a bunch of bites.
But the first, we got the first one.
First
was
bite, we
a
almost
single.
Tripled up.
The first one, we got
every
a single.
Yeah, but every rod got bit. Yep.
And then the next.
The
second one was a double.
Was it a double?
Yeah.
It was another single.
We had a single, a double, then a single.
Yep.
Yeah.
And every time, though, every single bait
every
got
single
bit.
Rod. The best one was the... Because we ended up with 4 rods out, and we had almost a quad.
Yes,
you know, because one rod got sucked off, and then so it came from like the inside out. So like the down rod got sucked off, the two far floaters both like went off. I think we ended up
pulled one and we're on one.
Yep.
And then the kite
and then
got
the
eaten.
Kite got eaten like out of the corner of our eyes. We're like, kite's on, like.
Yeah.
And I just went like, I mean, we had 200. We knew it was a 50-incher, like 200. Pound leader, actually no more, 400 pound on that one. Yeah. It went straight to sunset on the drag.
Yeah, that was fun,
dude. It was awesome. It was. Dude. I haven't seen that in
probably 10 years.
Yeah,
the video footage is incredible. One of the twins grabs the GoPro and he's like filming each release, and he has like the New York accent. So he like films himself like as we're releasing the third one. He's like, "That's tree."
So good.
Dude, it's unbelievably perfect. So anyway, after that first day, they were jacked up.
Yeah.
Like everyone was jacked up. It was like, we actually fished late because we released everything. We were trying to.
And we came back over the bay and saw some big ones and put baits out. We got a poor beagle.
Mm-hmm. Sunset poor beagle.
Home. Beautiful pictures of that.
So there was, needless to say, when we went out, so we had a lay day Saturday.
Yep.
Sunday, Glenn joined us. It was even gnarlier. We tried it. Did a look-see. It sucked. We fished the river, and then we did the same thing. We went back out around like...
But they weren't at the bait spot.
No, they were...
So we had to go to Peaked Hill, and we got there, and we found fish, and they were the size of like Brian's forearm. They were like 30 pounders.
Yeah.
I don't think they could have eaten a mackerel.
Not the ones we put out.
No.
They were frightened of those mackerel.
Yeah. They probably swam the other way.
Yeah. But, you know, it was like, that's the best part about that. From the beginning, you know, lots of things went wrong, from the fact that we couldn't get up to Canada. We had been like waiting all this time, and then, you know, salvaged trips together. These guys were just like happy to get on the water. We've been talking about that before. I think we started like recording this, but like, or maybe I think when we were talking about charters, like, you know, these guys were just happy to like, get out and like,
right,
you know, go have a fun day, drink a bunch of beers and just like, just chill out. You know, they stayed down in Green Harbor and they had a, you know, we just had a full pirate weekend. It was, yeah, it was sick. You know what I mean? So like even the day that we didn't, you know, we didn't produce, it was a blast, you know?
I think that's important from a charter perspective is, you know, working hard to maintain the relationship, even if you aren't able to fish. There's times when people drive all the way here and you get to fish for half of one day because the weather all turns, you know? So trying to make everyone feel a part of everything, you know, go out to lunch, go out to breakfast, at least give it a look-see, do something. You know, if you feel involved and then you're able to get out there for a half a day, even if you catch some mackerel or whatever, you're actually able to enjoy it that much more.
Yeah, I think that, like, you know, we take for granted a lot of, like, the extraneous stuff that you do with, like, fishing, you know, like, the dock stuff, you know, just hanging out, rigging, and, like, for other people, like, they're, like, getting a little taste of, like, what it's like, and it's awesome, you know what, yeah, I mean? Like, it's so fun, and, like, and that day we came back, and we were just hanging out, getting coffees. I think we went and pulled the slick fish. Those guys went for a little, yep, river cruise. I mean, like, they just saw, like, a full... Yeah. Pirate day, like
they were Gloucester.
That's why they said that.
That's when Glenn was on the boat, because they had already experienced like the rough, like, tuna fishing day. That was what they were saying all morning. Like, we're like, you guys think the wind's gone down enough? They're like, of course it has. We're Gloucesterans.
No, you guys are from Manhattan.
Yeah, exactly. You're wearing white jeans.
I can't believe it. I think it was so rough that it was like the opposite of getting seasick.
Yeah.
I think they were just so frightened that their immune system like guarded them from getting seasick.
Yeah.
I've put them.
They're in fight or flight mode.
I've put their livers through the ringer. Like, they're not like that.
Yeah, you've trained them well.
That wasn't going to hurt them. Oh. They're firefighters like in college and everything like that. Those guys are hardy there, but it was classic.
We have to get them out next year and actually like hopefully grease one.
Well, we're
because they were pissed when I released the last one. They're like, it's plenty big enough. I'm like, that's not big enough. Yeah,
and then like 150 pounds.
I kept saying, I was like, we're not killing a little one, because I'm like, with a bite this crazy, we're catching, yeah, one on Sunday. You know what I mean? Yeah. We'll kill a little one like at some point, but yeah, we're gonna grease a big one today.
Yeah.
And it just, boy, did it shut off fast. But yeah, you know, and it's so funny because Pat's fiance is like a sushi like connoisseur.
Oh,
you
no.
know what I mean?
she had no sushi.
She was not happy with me. You know, not happy with Patrick's performance.
Oh god.
And I'm like, we caught plenty, like, you know, we just didn't kill them, you know, we're conservationists. so next year I'd love to we'll have to get him up here again, but
we'll have to make it up to Patrick's, yeah, wife.
I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, I'll have to send him some or something like that.
Yeah,
but they're booked for PEI, but we'll kill a little one. We'll get him up here and kill a little one.
Yeah,
but
dude, they're a great group of guys.
It's so fun.
So funny.
It was nice to get out for an entire weekend too, you know, like just do pirate stuff.
Yeah. That was like the first weekend of like true fall weather too, I feel, yeah, like.
That was
like
bad weather. You know? The whole week was bad week.
It was so...
2 weeks, really.
It didn't look like... Yeah, well, September was windy, and then... So that was the first week of October?
Yeah. October 9th, I think.
Yeah, so like... And then it just got like cold and windy.
Yeah.
Which is a tough combo. But yeah, we ended up making it work, which was great.
Yeah. It was fun.
Anything else?
I don't think so, boys. We've been talking for an hour and 40 minutes.
Oh, my God. Hour and 40 minutes of
fun. We've answered 5 listeners' questions. Thank you guys for submitting those on Instagram. The trolling techniques one that Jimmy wants us to talk about, that's like a whole episode in itself.
Yeah. For sure.
So I think we're just going to have to focus on that.
We could talk more about like marking fish and producing bites and stuff like that too. Another one. Because we didn't really go over that.
Yep.
I think that was part of one of those guys' questions.
What else? What
I know we want to talk about kind of what we are going on in the off season too before we wrap this one up. Tuna tails.
Yes. We have a lot of tuna tails. A
lot of tuna tail taxidermy going on.
40 something now.
Yeah.
40 something tuna taxidermy tails.
We still have room. If there's anyone that wants a last minute one done that's in good shape, like the next couple weeks is like.
So explain good shape to people.
So
if you have a tail, if you have a fish you killed this year.
Yes.
Yep.
Big, small, in between, doesn't matter. If you want it done, it has to be like flat. Like you don't want one that's like got all curled tips and has been bent up in your freezer outside or whatever else.
So what do we do to the tails for people that don't know?
As far as
we're taxiderming the tails, so we're epoxying the tails.
Yeah, so we cure the tails. We have a method that takes a little bit of time that actually cures them, and then we coat them in epoxy and finish them off however, you know, the customer wants it done. Custom bases, paint jobs, natural black, clear coat, doesn't really matter. But it takes a little bit of time, you know, three to six months to get it done, but that's kind of what we're doing now. Boats are all put away. Tails.
Sold the slick fish.
Hopefully replacing it. We'll see.
Yep.
More news on that to come. And holidays. Hats are on the website. Plenty in stock. Anyone wants a Christmas present for a family member? Those are on there. Buffs. Coasters. You want to talk about the coasters?
Yes. So if you guys have any, if you have any hooks that you saved from special catches, crazy battles, big fish, whatever, maybe you caught a certain species of fish that you kept the hook from the fight. We embed them into coasters. So basically, picture a coaster for a beer or wine or whatever. The hook is inside it and it's clear coated and it's pretty cool. So that's on our website and Instagram as well.
Seabrosfishing.com. That's it. What are you selling, Dave? Selling body parts? Anything like that?
Yeah, you have to hit me up on the side.
Do you have an OnlyFans account yet?
The bills aren't gonna pay themselves, Taylor. No, nothing. I don't think I'm selling anything, as far as I know. You know, maybe someone's selling something in my name. But no, nothing. Just doing you. Just trying to pass this winter by.
Got a lot of podcasts lined up.
Yep.
Babies.
Got a little boy coming in January.
Unbelievable.
Crazy maniac.
Callum and him are gonna have.
They're gonna be pirate baby pirate legends
crushing Bud Lights
at like 8 years old.
They're coming out of the womb holding a Bud Light.
Yeah. Right. A Bud Light and a 130.
It's gonna be sick. Can't wait to get them out fishing.
I know, it's gonna be awesome.
It's gonna be so fun.
Finley's almost at the age now. I might buy her first little push button, probably for her birthday.
And Elsa,
which is in February.
Frozen, yeah. Is like it Elsa and Frozen? Did I get that right?
Yep.
Okay. No, don't act like you didn't know that.
I have never seen it.
I can tell you everything about the movie Frozen.
Well, that's for another day. Mm.
But yeah, just trying to get through the winter. I mean, starting on the boats just came. Persistence just went down to Florida. Tyler brought it down there. We just took old oil out the other day. The center consoles are out of the water. So just starting on some gear stuff. Go through gear and. You know, it's funny. You blink an eye and it's all like
ready to rock.
It goes by fast.
Yeah, January. You know, we're gonna really blink an eye. It's gonna be January 1, and then you know you chip away at a little bit of gear, start getting yourself ready, and like last year, last March was tough, and April was windy too. But once you know the boats were in April, you know what I mean. So it all starts to happen pretty fast. So, yeah, that's pretty basically it. Just start getting ready. Maybe try to go sell fish a little bit, but who knows?
All right, we gotta do it. We gotta end this.
Yep.
So we're gonna end you with OG's words of wisdom.
Do you want to do them today, Taylor?
Sure. You can't catch them without a hook in the water. You got to trust your own instincts. And the third, you'll just have to, you know, wait and see.
Stay tight. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Sea Bros Fishing Podcast. We want to take a moment to, again, thank our sponsors, Mass Bay Guides, LT Marine Products, and Deep Apparel. If you guys haven't checked them out on social media already, please make sure you do so. See new products, fishing reports, and what everyone has going on into next season. For the latest content, podcast info, fishing reports, general updates, please make sure that you check us out and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Sea Bros Fishing, Mass Bay Guides, or our personal accounts, MBG Taylor and MBG Brian. If you have ideas for podcast topics, podcast guests, you know, where they're on there all the time, very responsive, please don't hesitate to reach out and shoot the breeze with us if you want to talk fishing or if you want to just brainstorm on the podcast. Also, if you are interested in getting some Sea Bros swag, maybe one of our Tuna Mark patch hats that seem to be pretty popular. We came out with buffs this year that have like a wolf pack on them that are pretty cool, like a wolf pack of tuna or whatever fish species that you like to mark on your fish finder. Those are also available at the Sea Bros website. So just visit seabrosfishing.com. Right there on the front page, you can scroll through the gallery of products that we offer so far. That's all we have for you guys today. Thanks for listening and stay tight.